You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, our guest says that Wisconsinites can enjoy the thrill of the hunt without firing a single shot. Instead, we can use a camera and a notebook. We'll learn more about that in a bit.
First, Governor Scott Walker and State Education Superintendent Tony Evers are disagreeing over how Wisconsin should follow a federal education law.
The Department of Public Instruction released a new plan to comply with the Every Student Succeeds Act. Governor Walker says the plan doesn't do enough to turn around failing schools. Evers says the plan had a bipartisan council support and also brings some of the education innovations that Walker was asking for.
Michael Ford is a professor in the Department of Public Administration at UW-Oshkosh. He joins us for a closer look at the disagreement between Evers and Walker over schools. Mike, welcome to Central Time.
Oh, you're welcome. Good to be here.
Well, first of all, big picture, what is the Every Student Succeeds Act?
Yeah, well, that is the most current iteration of what was the No Child Left Behind Act prior. So it's the largest federal law dealing with K-12 education in the U.S.
And what's this annual state report supposed to accomplish?
Yeah, the point of this state report is for each state to lay out its plan. The big shift from No Child Left Behind is that rather than having the federal government kind of set the mandates, the idea here is that the state government is best positioned, the state education agency specifically is best positioned to create a plan that can actually improve outcomes.
And is this a significant plan that people do stuff with, or is this kind of a bureaucratic hoop to jump through that gets filed away and is never spoken of again?
You can make the argument both ways on that, but I think it is a significant plan. I mean, it forces state education agencies to articulate their goals, and it forces them to lay out plans for their lowest performing schools. So in that regard, it is a large opportunity.
Now, looking at this Wisconsin's version of this plan for this year, what are some of the main ideas in this report we're talking about?
Yeah, well, I would say that the goals of the plan in particular are bold. So it's laid out in there that they want to cut racial and socioeconomic achievement gaps in half over a six-year period, and that's a very tall task. Mm-hmm. And they do have interventions in the plan for the lowest performing schools in the state, in which they'll bring in external teams to do an evaluation, create school-level improvement plans, and that's no joke. That's serious stuff.
And apart from the racial achievement gap, what other kinds of things are trying to be accomplished here?
Yeah, there's certainly policies in there, ideas in there that are designed to improve teacher quality. But really, the kind of the gist of it is to make sure that the lowest performing schools can close their racial and socioeconomic achievement gaps.
Let's look at the process behind the plan. As I understand it, there's a pretty big committee, long list of names, school administrator groups and school officials, a school choice advocacy group, teachers unions, bipartisan group of lawmakers, and a representative from the governor's office, in addition, of course, to the superintendent of public instruction, Tony Evers. What went into crafting this plan?
Yeah, it's quite a significant process. So they have the group you're referring to is called the Equity Council. And it was created by DPI, and like you said, it had representation across the board. They met seven times over the course of about a one-year period. It might be a little shorter than that. But certainly it was DPI themselves who was in charge of crafting the actual plan, but they were getting feedback from all these different individuals and the organizations they represent along the way. Because the real goal here is buy-in and alignment. For a plan like this to work, people have to be on the same page.
And now we find the governor is not on the same page. He says he's not signing off on this report. He says it's falling short. What are the governor's objections?
Yeah, well, I think there's a couple of things going on here. First, there are groups and legislators out there who support Walker, that support parental choice policies, and they view DPI as a barrier to improving achievement outcomes in Wisconsin. I think for those folks, really any plan DPI came up with would be deemed insufficient. And then, of course, the obvious, the issue is highly politicized right now by the fact that both Walker and Evers hold a statewide office, and they're both running for governor in 2018. So the governor specifically wants the state to be more, a state education agency to be a little bit bolder, as he stated in his letter. And, obviously DPI disagrees with that.
And the form of that boldness sounds like offering more school choice options. Is that a fair assessment?
I think so. I mean, clearly the governor wants to see macro governance changes in low-performing schools. So what I mean by macro governance is moving struggling schools into a state-run district or some other broad governance entity. But I think it's important to note that the plan is laid out by DPI. It does call for these micro-level governance changes. In other words, changes to the way in which individual schools are run. And that is significant.
We're talking to Michael Ford, professor in the Department of Public Administration at UW-Oshkosh, about a new plan for education in Wisconsin aimed at addressing some gaps, some inequities, a conflict, a bit of a turf war between the Department of Public Instruction and Tony Evers and Governor Walker, and the legislature, too, Mike, as I understand it. There's been talk, at least, of legal challenges saying, you know, the DPI can't set this policy by itself. It has to have the legislature on board. It has to have them weigh in. Is that part of the story here?
Well, it certainly is. I'm not a lawyer, nor do I pretend to be one. But I mean, going back to the Tommy Thompson era, there have been attempts to challenge the independence of the Department of Public Instruction. It's unique, and Wisconsin is a unique state in that regard, that the head of our state education agency is elected as opposed to appointed. Now, that's in the Wisconsin state constitution. So I find it difficult to see a scenario where this does have to go through the legislature, because it does seem pretty within the bounds of authority of DPI.
Well, let's get into the problem that everybody, I think, is trying to solve in their own different ways. We have big achievement gaps in Wisconsin. Often the phrase worst in the nation comes up, especially when talking about achievement gaps among ethnic and racial groups. Can you talk about the problems we face here in the state?
Yeah, they are significant. Those numbers don't lie. Those numbers have been bad, bad for a very long time. And a lot of the things we have attempted to do to close those achievement gaps simply have not been successful. Now, I just published a book on the consequences of governance fragmentation in Milwaukee. Excuse the plug there, but I had to get that in. But in it, I demonstrate the danger of implementing what these bold governance reforms like the governor is calling for. So things like a state-run recovery district or a mayoral takeover. They're built under the idea that magically, you know, just shifting governance structures magically will improve achievement. But without clearly articulated goals, widespread buy-in, and really alignment across these different systems, you'll end up with a situation like we have in Milwaukee, where you have a whole lot of disruption to the status quo, and it came out of a place of, you know, good intentions, because the status quo was unacceptable. But all these changes haven't actually improved student outcomes. Instead, we have this trail of collateral damage. The details matter a great deal. A governance reform is only going to be as good as its ability to create high-performing schools. And I think that there are serious concerns about the capacity for some of the things we've tried in this state to actually do that, because on aggregate, we just have not seen those gaps close to a degree that is necessary.
Let's take a closer look at the Department of Public Instruction plan as it relates to, I think you call it micro interventions in some ways. Instead of changing who's the boss, you know, taking out the school board and shifting it, what kind of things would they do at a difficult school to change the outcomes?
Yeah, they would send in an external team, and they'd be under the management of DPI, who's trained in, as they put it, implementation science. And they are there to really align the curriculum within the school, try to ensure uniform teaching quality across the school, make sure those data systems exist at the school level so that we're actually using test score data, not just for accountability purposes, but actually to inform instruction, inform decision making, and really create a more positive school climate and culture. And while none of those things in particular sound all that sexy, not as sexy as changing, moving a school from, say, the Milwaukee Public Schools to a new recovery school district, those really are the things at the school level that enable a student to get a consistent message, a consistent level of instruction from K through 8.
As we start to wrap up, is there a track record on this kind of effort? Do we have success stories from maybe elsewhere in the country for this kind of intervention?
It's a mixed bag. I mean, there are certainly places. The one example that you always hear is New Orleans, and they had, it was actually prior to Katrina, but really took off after Hurricane Katrina, this thing called the Recovery School District, where the lowest performing schools were placed into a state-run district. Some of them were converted to charter schools with the goal of raising student achievement, and they did have some success there. But for every success, there's also examples in the country, Tennessee being one, where we haven't seen that level of success. And I think it really boils down to the fact that, like I said earlier, a governance change in and of itself is not necessarily going to be successful. Some of the things we tried in Wisconsin, like giving a kid a voucher, well, giving a kid a voucher may improve student achievement if they're moving from a lower-performing school to a high-performing school, but that's not guaranteed. So really, the challenge and the goal needs to be creating governance frameworks that enable the things that actually impact student achievement, like high-quality instruction, to occur.
Mike, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You are very welcome.
That was Michael Ford, professor in the Department of Public Administration at UW Oshkosh. He joined us to take a look at how Wisconsin might comply with the Every Student Succeeds Act, a federal education law.
Coming up, we learn about no harvest hunting. Our guest says all we need is a camera, a notebook, and our memory. Stay with us here on Central Time.